Classic business, innovation and competitiveness.
Well, the words innovation and competitiveness certainly encapsulate the story of Capitec, which was named the Sunday Times Top 100 Company of the Year for the second year running, and its Chief Executive Officer, Gerry Fourie, the Business Leader of the Year as well. So, Gerry, congrats on pulling a Springboks double actor, Team and Coach of the Year. Well done.
Michael, yeah, thank you very much. We're very proud of the two awards we've won. I believe it's due to very strong team efforts. So, yeah, we're very happy.
Now, I know it's a team effort, but your personal story is interesting because you've led the company for the past 5 years. You've grown it from the sixth largest bank in the country to the largest based on client numbers, more than 13 million South Africans now. Capitec is also the largest digital bank in the country, more than 6.5 million digital clients. And 6 million of your clients also make use of your branch networks. So you've upended traditional wisdom on the death of brick and mortar too. But I want to take you right back to where it all began for you as a leader. You had an honours degree in financial management. You had an MBA in hand. And you started your career with Stellenbosch Farmers Winery in the financial planning division. And you also then worked for several years in the winery sales, marketing, production and distribution division in KZN. What did that period teach you about business?
Well, I think, you know, I was quite privileged. Like you said, I started in the financial planning division. I worked there for about 4 or 5 years. And then at the age of 27, I was my general manager for KwaZulu-Natal. So I had the privilege of actually running the business in totality, from distribution, credit, etc., finance, all the different functions. So I had a very nice exposure. But I think the most important thing is if you in liquor, you're thinking a lot about distribution, you're thinking a lot about client service, and you're learning, I think, especially if you look at the black townships and other areas that you traditionally not operate in. And I think that helped us a lot when we started Capitec in 2000, where we could really spend the first 6-7 months actually just stipulating what the client wants and what our focus should be, and write our business plan. I always say it was a very it's a very good discipline. You know, it's nice to dream, but it's important to write down your discipline and to write down your fundamentals. Are you going to run the business? And I think we've done that extremely well in the beginning.
And that business plan obviously built from first principles without having to deal with the many of the legacy IT systems of some of your competitors. In 2000, when you were approached by Michiel Le Roux to start Capitec Bank, it must have been a very interesting time. And for 13 years, you worked as COO before being named CEO. Was it hard back then selling this vision to investors who perhaps saw the Big Four as almost impenetrable in this market, so dominant as they were?
No, I think, you know, that's one of those things I say, if your dream doesn't scare you, you don't dream high enough. You know, if I look when we started, there was two ways to start a bank. You started with a lot of money, or we started out of a different angle with micro lending. But, you know, for me, it was always being, I never dreamt of being a CEO or even a banker. For me personally, it was all about living your dream and building an organization. And I believe that's still what we're doing today. So when I got the opportunity, it was all about building it. And yeah, I think taking on the traditional banks, we believe there's certain things that we can do completely different. And we've tackled those areas. You know, we believe very strongly simple things like simplicity and transparency was critical. So we made certain that our branches were open longer hours. We made certain that our product range was very well understood. And even from a pricing perspective, even today, the majority of our prices is 1 rand. So everyone understands when they do a transaction that they pay 1 rand or 3.50 if it's a debit order. So it's that fundamentals that we laid down in those beginning years and what we're still executing today.
Gerry, were there any early investors who you saw who didn't buy into the dream, who are probably kicking themselves now?
Yeah, I think we all know the share price has moved from, I think we listed at 2 rand and now it's over 1,400. But yeah, I think for us, it's more about, if you know, still look at the expert team, It's about doing the right things and doing things for the client. It's not about the share price. We hardly ever talk about the share price. It's the fundamentals of the business and making certain we've got three focus areas in our culture that we focus on. And the first one is the client. The second one is our own people, our staff that's working for us. How can we make certain that they're motivated, they understand where we're going? And the third one is delivering on the needs of those clients. And, you know, that's basically what we spend the majority of our time on, is to talk about those three components.
And amazing, like Jeff Bezos, when you put the client at the center of everything, what you can achieve, even in a market that was supposedly so oligopolistic. And in fact, if you look at it, Harry, what strikes me about the Capitec story is that it demonstrates that perhaps our markets are not as oligopolistic as the government and certainly Minister Patel and others believe it to be in imposing stricter competition laws. They think that's the way we need to open up. But if you look at Capitec, it shows you can enter even a highly regulated market with these high barriers to entry and lots of supposed concentration and be successful if you've got the right formula.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people start with looking at regulations and all the problems and all the issues there is, and all the competitors, and then walk away from it. While we looked at it purely from a client perspective and say, well, how can we solve the problems the client is experiencing in banking? And that was our focus. And I think, you know, it's a message for everyone. If you look at all the negative things and don't have a positive mindset that you can do it, then you're going to struggle. And if you don't put the client in the middle of everything you're doing, you're also going to struggle. So even given what's happening, we are firm believers of a free market system. And you must just create an opportunity or a regulatory environment where everyone is clear on what they can do, and then leave it up to the business people to deliver on those needs. For us, that's very important.
And that speaks to another issue that you have been quoted on in the media quite extensively over the last 24 hours, and this debate that needs opening up around BEE in particular. I was chatting to Nigel Casey, the British High Commissioner. I was chatting to the Irish Trade Representative, and they both mentioned the constraints that that particular policy has on investments by foreigners into South Africa. It's almost as if government doesn't want to have this conversation. That's why I found it so interesting, because we have seen recently the investment envoys like Trevor Manuel, Pumzile Langeni, open up the space for us to talk about BEE and the fact that it adds a premium and someone has to pay. And arguably, if the payoff is economic transformation, it could be deemed as a social cost worth paying. And no one would argue against that in South Africa with our history. But the problem is, with BEE and certainly procurement, it runs deeper because the history has taught us it compromises our competitiveness, and it systemically has bred corruption, as we've seen with state capture and how many firms under the guise of enterprise and supply development got into our state-owned enterprises. Do you think this issue can be depoliticized enough to have the mature conversation about how we address the tension between all of these issues and do redress the right way?
You know, for me, I'll take an example very early in my life at some farmers' winery where we converted our delivery fleet into owner drivers, because that gave the opportunity for people to own their own businesses. We did that for the first year and a half, and it wasn't very successful because our drivers didn't understand how to handle cash and to manage let's call it a small company. And then we realized we need to appoint mentors and people that can assist them and support them. And it was a very big lesson for me in those and then it turned out to be a very big success. And I think that's what we need to do in South Africa, is actually to nurture the whole free market spirit, but then to assist, mentor, support small businesses and help them to actually understand the challenges of doing business, understanding cash flow, understand management, understand strategies. I think that's where I think businesses can add much more value than just pure shareholding that's being given away and that benefits a couple of people.
Yeah, the very narrow approach to what is a very critical issue around economic transformation in the country. One certainly hopes that we can have these frank and robust conversations about tackling it and doing it the right way. If we don't and just repeat the mistakes of the past, I'm afraid the prognosis isn't good. Looking back on your career, is there a piece of advice that was given by a friend or a mentor, maybe even someone who didn't invest, that has stuck with you throughout your career?
Yeah, I think actually we had a graduate program where we bring people into the bank and then they're on a rotation basis for about 18 months and then they go into positions. And I addressed them yesterday and I got that question as well. And I said, I remember when I was about 24, 25, I asked our CEO at that time, Dave Marlow, what's the best advice he can give me. And he said, there's three stages to a particular, if you take on a job. The first one is you really need to make certain that you understand it, that you learn it, and you understand it from A to Z. The second phase was to make certain you own it and you put your stamp on it so people understand what you've done with that particular job. And then the third one is to develop somebody else so that you can move on. And I think those three steps is quite critical, I think, for everyone, because you can apply it right through anything you're doing. It's, you know, really understand what you're doing, is then master it, and then develop somebody else to take over from yourself so that you can move on. So that was a very valuable lesson when I was very young.
Harry, you've been in the role for 5 years. The last question I've got to leave you with, does that mean you are potentially looking at who is going to be taking over and what the succession plan is? I often think of my late colleague David Gleeson, who always used to quote Gavin Reilly, who he worked for at Anglo American, as saying the tenure of a CEO should be around about 7 years. And after that, you really need a fresh set of eyes to have a look at the business.
Yeah, I think it's very important. It's one of those questions that I need to address. We're working very hard on succession planning. It's part of your DNA, because you need to make certain that you create a company that can become 100 years old. So that's something we work very hard on. But we just acquired a mercantile bank, which is in business banking. So that gives us new opportunities and new things to do. And that helps us also to maybe look at sort of restructuring and have different focuses. So I believe there's still opportunities, but we're definitely working on succession planning as well.
Oh, Shapa, Harry, thanks for sharing your business journey with us here on Classic Business.